This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, everybody, how are you? We are live at Wayland Brewing. I want to say brewery and brewing, so I gotta get that extra R out of there. It's Wayland Brewing right here in Orchard Park. Sal Capaccio with you. Glad to be with you on a great Friday. How about that? Day number two of the NCAA tournament. How about yesterday? We get day number one. I basically put out there my brackets, 697 complete brackets entered in, Josh. 697 complete brackets, I think it was, maybe 694. We had 1,000 people actually put their names on a bracket, over 1,000, but close to 700 complete brackets. How about that? Pretty cool, right, when you think about that?
Yeah, that's a lot of people out there that are just, you know, hoping for the best and having all their, you know, dreams crushed in the first game of the day. Most of them. Like, for me, I picked Louisville, and that did not go well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and like,
who did you pick? I'm sorry, you picked who?
Half my brackets, I picked Louisville. The other half, I picked Creighton. And the ones I really cared about, I picked Louisville. So that was not a great result for me.
Well, listen, that's going to happen, especially with 8-9 games, right? I mean, everybody's going to be losing some of those 8-9 games. So you just have to keep the faith and stay with it. You don't want to lose a team that you have going on a long way. It's fine if your team loses early. Like, you're going to have a lot of teams that lose. As long as you don't have Louisville, like, going into the Final Four, that's what really kills you. You can't have a team. Like, I got a little bit nervous. I have Auburn winning it all in my bracket. And I got a little bit nervous. Auburn had, like, it was like a two-point game with, like, 2 minutes left in the first half. And then they go on a huge run. It's 10 points at halftime. You're feeling better about that. Michigan last night had to survive. If you had Clemson advancing on, if you're an ACC fan, you have Clemson, I'm sorry. If you had them advancing on, that was McNeese State, what they did to Clemson last night. And Clemson has this big comeback. I kind of tuned out of it. We had some stuff going on. Max had an event for hockey and baseball than hockey. So I kind of checked in on the game. Clemson was down big. I'm like, wow, McNeese State is just you know, just run them out of the gym. And all of a sudden, I look and they lose by two. Now, I know they didn't really have a chance to tie it at the end. They did get a bucket at the end as the time expired to get within two. But I saw that happen as well. So after day number one of the SalSports CBSSports.com bracket, which I am going to award the winning person $100 to the NCAA online shop. If you're second place, you're going to get $50 a gift card to the NCAA online shop, and third place gets $25 out of the goodness of my heart because I'm just a nice guy. We're going to do that today for the winner. And here are the leaders after day number one. Just day one, okay? We got Lucas Jones in first, who has Connecticut winning it all. You know what I love about the leaderboard, Josh, is all the leaders, the top one, two, three, four, five people have somebody different winning the whole thing. All right, and this is after day number one, which is really cool, right? So Lucas Jones is in first, has Connecticut winning it all, 99 points. Then Dennis Wepner, 98, has Duke winning it all. Neil Bomber, 97, has Alabama. My buddy, who's a coach down in Florida, actually, a football and basketball coach, Sean Huber, 95 points. I texted him, like, dude, you're, like, out of 700 people, fourth place in my pool right now, 95 points. He's got the Gators. And then Anthony Negrelli, 94 points, has Michigan State winning it all. So we got a lot of different things and people, you know, different kind of teams winning it all here for people who are up near the top. I mean, I hate to start on a negative, but what about last night? What about, I think that's a movie name. I think that might be a movie name or something. About Last Night is the name of a movie or a show or something like that, right? About Last Night, Josh, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, the other day, Jeremy did something on the radio that talked about how a team, like, if you thought your team ever hit rock bottom, you didn't know rock bottom until what this team did in Europe. Did you hear that story? You were on with them, right? You heard that story about that team in Europe and what they did?
Yeah,
the soccer team?
That was rough.
With the moment of silence? Did you hear that when Jeremy was talking about it?
Yeah, it was bad.
So Jeremy tells this story the other day on the air. Yeah, he says, if you think your team ever hit rock bottom, you don't know because this one team in Europe, apparently, and I don't remember the name, but I'm listening to the story as I'm driving, and he said that they had a moment of silence for a former player who passed away. Well, it turned out the player never actually passed away. So they had this moment of silence. Like, that is rock bottom. Like, oh, my God, I can't believe you did that, right? Somebody got really bad information. So that is truly rock bottom. But last night, the Sabres find yet another way to make you go, I can't believe that just happened. But at this point, you kind of can believe it just happened. And I was with it. Did you watch the entire game last night? Remember, we talked about this. Did you stay with the entire game last night, Josh?
No, I actually went to bed after the first period, and it was a great surprise for me this morning waking up. And the first five posts I see on Twitter are, wow, the Sabres scored an own goal. And then, like, a Sabres account going, guys, how did we do this? And then another, like, national account going, oh, wow, look at this. The Sabres scored an own goal. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like, it was just such a great way to wake up this morning and start my Friday off on the right foot. Like, just what another like, and it's, I think you tweeted out this morning, it's just kind of funny, like, the year of crazy goals. We had a goaltender from the Penguins score on the Sabres on an empty net, and then the Sabres score on themselves on an empty net.
It's just
crazy.
I know, and I wrote that last night. I said, in the same season, the Sabres have scored in their own empty net from their own offensive zone, by the way. Let's remember that. Right? Their own offensive zone. They throw the puck back and it goes all the way in the net. And then they also had a goalie actually score a real goal in them. These are not two fluky goals either. Like, sometimes goalies have scored in the NHL over the years. We've seen some goalies literally shoot it down the ice, like what happened against the Penguins when that happened with the Sabres. But generally, when a goalie has scored in the NHL, a lot of times it's he's the last person to touch it. Something happens. That's happened as well. This was a legit goalie goal, shooting it down the ice. This was, what, maybe 2 months ago? I remember when it was. It was the night before a Bills game. I was out with a buddy of mine who was in town. And I remember watching it, actually. We were out at a place and watching it. So I remember that happened a couple months ago. And then last night, can you play the audio here, Josh? You have the audio, right? Because I think the most amazing part about the audio, and I think it's everybody, every Sabres fan is Rob Ray during the audio. Every Sabres fan is Rob Ray, because leading up to the audio, you're going to play it. But I don't think you hear the part, because I've heard it this morning when you played it. Early in this sequence, what happens is, in case people didn't see it, the Sabres are down. There's about a minute and a half left. They have pulled James Reimer already. So they're down 3-2. They pull James Reimer. They're on a 6-on-5, essentially, with no goalie. Then there's a delayed penalty that's coming to the Utah Hockey Club. And Rob starts saying on the air, give him the puck, give him the puck. He's saying because you want to stop it so you get a full, you know, minute and a half of just going, you know, 6-on-4 basically, even though it's going to be no goalie. Give him the puck, he's saying. And then this happens.
Buffalo, a high stick in front. Doesn't appear to have been
called.
Yeah,
there
it is.
Give him the puck.
Give him the puck.
Give him the puck.
Sabres throw it away, and this is going to maybe go into the net, off the boards. Oh, my goodness, it did.
Give him the puck.
I mean, the last bit there, the last four words by Rob Ray are all of us, right? I mean, because we're like, give him the puck. Like, that's just, it's a microcosm of things that have happened. And with this organization and where they've been and what has happened over the last, I guess, 14 years, but really maybe more recently. And it, I don't know, there's nothing left to really say about it, right? I come on the radio here, we could talk about it. What are you going to do? You're going to call up and go, ha ha, yeah, I don't know. You're going to do that? You're going to call up and say, fire Kevin Adams, fire Lindy Ruff, sell the team? What? I mean, what are we doing? We've exhausted all of this. I think last night was just another one of those, it's SMH, facepalm, whatever. I can't believe this just happened. But at the same time, you almost can believe it because these are the things that have happened with the Buffalo Sabres over the last however many years you want to talk about it. And it's just, it's really tough. If you are a Sabres fan, I think Buffalo is a proud hockey city. It is. And you can debate me and tell me all you want. That's not true because they've been bad. Folks, I'm going to tell you, we have now been ingrained in my family in the hockey culture of actually having my son play. And I am blown away. And I know this has always been the case. I think it might be even more so now because so many, because it's awesome to see so many girls playing hockey as well now these days. But I would say that I was blown away, and I've been blown away over the last year or so, of how hockey resonates all across this region at every level. And we are truly such a great hockey city. We can be. We should be. We are. We are. And I understand that it's tough to say that when you have a team, a professional hockey team, that has gone 14 years of missing the playoffs. And I'm not one to come on and take cheap shots and make jokes and things like that. I'm not. I just get upset and frustrated because I'm like a lot of you. I grew up passionate about this team, going to games, and remembering a lot of great things. And maybe I'm older than some of you. I remember the 80s and the Boston Bruins fights in the Adams Division playoffs. And some of you remember the 90s, and that's your entry point into the Buffalo Sabres, and LaFontaine and McGillney and Dominic Hasek, and then going to a Stanley Cup in the late 90s. And some of you, maybe your entry point, like Josh, my producer, like Joe DiBiase, early 2000s, and then you get into 06, 07. Those are your formative years. And we all have those entry points. We all have those memories, right, to get this to of what we have here. And that's what we're kind of holding on to. And it's so frustrating because as much as you say, and I get it all the time, I see it. I see people tweet me at Sal Sports. I get people calling, and they say it. Inevitably, I'm checked out. I'm done. All right? And you might be, but you'll be back. You'll be back. I don't think there's anybody that I don't believe anybody, at least. I have friends that have said it. I have friends that'll tell me I'm not buying season tickets, and that's fine. And they might not have, but they want to go. They're only doing it because they don't see the value in it necessarily. It's not because they don't love their hockey team anymore. I mean, we love this team. And when something like last night happens, Like I said, I'm not the one. I did tweet out, hey, I can't believe the Sabres had a goalie score on them and scored a goal, an own goal, you know, in their own empty net in the same season. But, I mean, it's easy to go down the hole of just making fun and LOLs and laughing. Like, that's not me. It's not my nature. It's not what I do. It's also just I'm not making fun. I want them to be good. I want them to be better. I want to go back to those days. And a lot of you, I have a son, you have kids, that you've been telling them how great like it was going to these games back then and watching this team play back in whatever it is. Again, your entry point. Maybe you grew up in the 70s with the Sabres and watching Gilbert Perreault skate around, right? 80s, like me. I was late 70s, early 80s into the mid-80s. And they weren't that good, by the way, in the mid-80s. They missed the playoffs a couple times then. They got out in the first round to the Quebec Nordique a couple times. And then you, or maybe you're that. Maybe you're the person who, oh my God, you remember this being what's called a hockey town over a football town. I would always debate people about this. That, like, people would tell me all the time how, oh my God, Buffalo is much more of a hockey town. And you would say that because in 06, 07, and around that time period, the Sabres were so darn good, and the Bills were in the middle of a playoff drought. Pretty much the middle, by the way, of the playoff drought. The exact middle, 6-7 years in. 8 years in, you get my point. We didn't know when they're going to make the playoffs. And I hear that from people, and I would hear that. And I'd always say, no, I think that, like, I remember the Super Bowl years. There's nothing like when the Bills are really good. The truth is, we are both, right? The truth is, we are both. We love our football team, and it's a lot easier to love right now. They're really good. They're knocking on the door of a Super Bowl, and they have the freaking league MVP. But, you know, as much as you tell me, you might be checked out on the Sabres, and, you know, where you are as far as if you want to just not even pay attention. Yeah, maybe that's the case right now because they're in last place and you're not checking the scoreboard every day. But I just know that everybody here will be back. They will. We just need that to happen. And last night, when things like that happen, it hurts our faith so much, right? But all it takes is a nice winning streak to restore it. We've all done it. I did it earlier this year. I mean, they have a 13-game losing streak, and that kind of, you know, took them out of it. But there are a couple times where all of a sudden you have a little bit of an uptick. You're like, wait a minute. Every time I'm out, they pull me back in. Right? The old Godfather line, Godfather 3. I think that was it, Godfather 3. It's just tough, man. I don't know. I just don't see I don't know. I guess I want to see the light, and people say at the end of the tunnel. A lot of people say there is no light at the end of the tunnel because of front office, ownership, whatever gets you there. I don't know. But in the meantime, I'll still be here, and it's not just because it's my job. It's because I want them to be good, and I want to see them in the playoffs, and I want them to win. I think a lot of you are in the same boat. It's just really hard. And last night was hard. Last night was hard to see that because of what happened at the end of the game, allowing a goal into your own net and knowing where this team... This is not like a fluke that a team that's in first place in their division, second place in their division, they're going to the playoffs and, oh my God, I can't believe they had a terrible game and a terrible moment. It just seems like it compounds it. It's on top of each other. So I didn't want to... I don't love being negative and starting off, but... And I try to be positive. I'm a positive guy, and that's kind of why I wanted to start this way, because as much as it is tough to see... Tough to watch, tough to talk about. We're all right there. I'm with you, and I think we all want to just be pulled in the same direction together. I just don't know when that's going to happen. And last night was tough seeing that. Luckily, we had some college basketball on at the same time last night. How about that, Josh? Did you flip it over to those late college basketball games after the Sabres game, or were you just like, I am out?
I mean, I stayed up for the first period of the Sabres game, then I went to bed, but I was checking in on some of the games throughout the afternoon. I mean, there were some great finishes. I was really bummed about UC San Diego. Yeah. I thought they were going to do it. I had them in a lot of my brackets, and I just had a really good feeling about them, and they kept it close, but, you know, unfortunately, that's how March goes. So, but there were great games yesterday.
Yeah,
moments all over.
Yeah, for sure. excuse me. I'm in 309th place. So
I just checked in my best ones.
I know UC San Diego. I have Michigan going on. Okay. Well, that's good. Good for you. And by the way, if you're in it, remember you get points for the seeds if they win. So if UC San Diego would have won, you would have gotten 12 points because they're a 12 seed and a point for the round, which is worth 1 point in the first round. So I reward upsets here, and I also do the round by round scoring. Hey, let's flip it a little bit. All right, we just talked about everything going wrong here with the Sabres and where they are. And last night, a really tough night, obviously in Utah. We're going to flip it a little bit, talk some college hoops today. Got my buddy John Scott, WGRZ TV2, Channel 2 Sports Director, coming in at 11 a.m. out here. He lives in the South Town, so I got to, with John. I said, hey, why don't you come in, say hi. Hoping to see his lovely wife, Heather Prusak, as well. You know her from Buffalo Sports Media. And I know that everybody might not know out there, but I know it's public. They had a baby recently, Logan. So I said, bring Heather, bring Logan. We'll see. Maybe we can say hi to each other. But either way, John will join me at 11 a.m. And we got the games going on a little bit after that. And I have to talk to John about what Jeremy said. Will John get to admit on the record that the worst officiated game ever in the history of college basketball was when Ohio State beat Syracuse in the Elite Eight about, what, 10 years ago now? It has to be about – I have to look exactly what year that was. It's got to be about 10 years ago now. We'll see if we can get him to admit it. In the meantime, we'll also talk Bills with John, my buddy John Scott. We'll do that. And but before that, how about this? It is the sun is shining. I know it's a little bit chilly. The Buffalo Bisons open up next week. The Bisons open up next week. We are in baseball season, everybody. What is the I know that the minor league schedule has kind of morphed a little bit here and expanded both in the early part of the season and in the late part of the season. It's been a couple years, but if I remember right, and I have to go back and look, I think the Bisons might have opened on the road last year, which kind of that meant that they were at home later to open the season. But we're going to be getting baseball games here in Buffalo next week downtown. How about that? Very cool. So anyway, that being said, Pat Malacaro is going to join me, and we are going to talk about the Bisons and their opening schedule, opening day, and what's going on. Pat Malacaro, of course, WGR Sports Radio 550. He is with Brian Colzio on the Sabres pre. Also, is the play-by-play man for the Buffalo Bisons. My apologies, everybody. I was in mid-sentence, and all of a sudden we had just had a drop connection, but I'm back here. Sal Capaccio with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show at Wayland Brewing. Come on out. 3740 North Buffalo Road in Orchard Park. I am looking. They have breakfast here, too. We have the promotions team here giving away WGR merch. Come on by. You can spin the wheel. You can grab some stuff. And I'm looking over, and there's a beautiful bacon and egg sandwich over there. They got egg and cheese sandwiches, corned beef, egg, cheese on rye, loaded hash browns. Come on by if you want for lunch. How about this? And dinner. Fish fry all day fish fry here. Also, they want to let you know, Mondays, bingo. Wednesdays, trivia. Thursdays, burger specials. They got concerts and special events, a bocce league on Buffalo's Best Patty. I might have to actually join the bocce league. You ever play bocce? You ever play bocce? Vinette, you ever play bocce? Oh, my gosh. Am I the only bocce player here? You got to learn how to play bocce. All right. If you have a wedding season, they have a great spot here to have your wedding reception. It's really cool. Come on out here. It is Wayland Brewing, and it's on North Buffalo Road in Orchard Park. You can't miss it. Huge space, great drinks, great food, and, of course, all the games today on the NCAA March Madness tournament that's going to be starting and tipping off just after 12:15 p.m. Going to talk about that a little bit with Pat Malacaro coming up here in just a second. Let me get you today's schedule real quick. Coming up at 12:15 p.m., our first tip-off is Baylor against Mississippi State. Then Robert Morris against Alabama. And, of course, Nate Oates, who used to be at University of Buffalo, the head coach at Alabama, there at 12:40 p.m. Lipscomb against Iowa State, the Bisons of Lipscomb, against Paul Hamilton's Iowa State team. Colorado State, Memphis after that. Mount St. Mary's takes on Duke. For all you Duke fans, that's a 2:50 p.m. tip time. I actually tweeted this out because I was thinking about this today, because Rick Pitino, St. John's, he's doing a great job at St. John's. And I said, you know what? I wonder if Rick Pitino, I'm thinking about where he's been, all the head coaching spots he's been. Does he have the most, like, biggest name brands of where he's been a head coach, counting college and NBA? He's been the head coach of, get this, Providence, Kentucky, Louisville, and St. John's, including Iona, in college, and the Knicks and the Celtics in the NBA. Then there's Larry Brown, though, who might have him beat. He's been the head coach of the Denver Nuggets, the New Jersey Nets, the San Antonio Spurs, the Los Angeles Clippers, the Indiana Pacers, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Detroit Pistons, the New York Knicks, and, oh, by the way, in college, UCLA and Kansas, which is incredible. I wonder what my buddy Pat Malacaro thinks about this. He's a big college basketball fan. We bring him on now on the Western Hotline. Of course, the play-by-play man for the Buffalo Bisons. What do you think? I think Pitino, maybe Larry Brown the most, but Larry Brown and Pitino might have the distinctions, I'd say, Pat, for the biggest name brands of being the head coach in both college and the NBA.
I think you're right. And when you talk about Rick Pitino, he didn't just coach at those locations in college. He was a winner everywhere he's gone. And he's taken all those different programs, which nobody else has done in the history of college basketball, right? Once he took St. John's to the tournament this year. So I think the longevity, you know, getting back to college after unceremoniously leaving Louisville and having to go to Greece for a couple of years and coach over there, and then coming to Iona. So there's a lot of moving parts there, but, you know, Rick Pitino has stood the test of time and wasn't even an assistant under Jim Boeheim for a year or two when he was getting his feet wet.
Yeah, he was. He started off, he's actually in Hawaii to start, and then he went his first, he was an assistant, and then he was an interim head coach in Hawaii, believe it or not, in 1976. Then Jim Boeheim hired him, and I believe the story goes that when he went to Kentucky, that's when Jim Boeheim was a guest of his at the Kentucky Derby, and that's where Jim met Julie, his wife.
I didn't know that story, but how about that?
Yeah, no doubt. That's Rick Pitino. And look, Larry Brown's had a great, successful career, too. He was known kind of for turning some teams around and, you know, and he won in a lot of places as well. Pat Malacaro joining me here on the Western Hotline. How about the tourney? I know you're a big college basketball guy. You've been involved with Canisius, the Metro, and watching it, you know, the mid-majors. What is your kind of consumption of the tournament these days now that everything has changed so much in college basketball with NIL and the portal?
Yeah, I think, you know, being at the Gallagher Center for Niagara Games or the Kessel Athletic Center for Canisius, to me, I always root for those level of teams because you're right. I mean, now that NIL and even going back to 2018 and 2019 when, you know, the Kentuckys were really starting to see that programs that built four-year programs. Look, Dayton, unfortunately, you know, COVID in 2020, Dayton was trending towards being one of the top teams in the country and having a run in the NCAA tournament. That's what I love to see about college basketball was a Canisius, a Niagara, and the Metro Atlantic that could build a program for two, three, 4 years and maybe upset somebody. You're not, maybe not a 16. That doesn't happen all that often. But, you know, do you get a 13 or 14 seed and be an upset because all you need to do is be better on one single day, and if you've got a core group of players, they can be better more consistently than the one-and-dones. And, you know, you look at Niagara this past year. They were one of six programs in the country that did not return a single scholarship player. And the other program, another one of the programs was Iona. Both of those programs had the same head coach. So four of the schools had new head coaches, and that's why they didn't return any scholarship players. But for Greg Paulus, he had a completely different roster this past year, and it was a work in progress. And that's why you saw some of the struggles for teams like that. But I would prefer those mid-majors that have been building something, just those great stories of the team overcoming years of struggles and finally getting in the tournament.
What do you think about where they're positioned right now? I think Greg Paulus, like you said, he's had to really revamp his roster. Canisius, as we know, has as well. But, you know, going forward, the outlook of the MAC and even some of the other teams that you've seen, like Mount St. Mary's in the tournament as well.
Yeah, I think the future is bright. And that's one of the things that in talking to Greg Paulus this year, he was very forthright in mentioning, look, the rules have changed so much and they change so frequently that you may recruit one way. And then by the time you're done with the recruiting period, the rules in terms of transfers and NILs might change in another direction. So being nimble and being able to adjust on the fly is such a big thing. And I think this past year was an adjustment period for a lot of those level programs, the smaller conference programs that you may only have a player for 1 or 2 years. How do you maximize that? How do you figure out a way to keep a player in your program for a couple of years, whether it's recruiting more into Canada and internationally, because you have more of an ability to build a 2 or 3 year relationship there with players. So I think that's the biggest thing this year for Niagara specifically, for Canisius and Jim Christian. Look, this year was just about getting back into the swing of things and with a new head coach and Jim Christian coming from Boston College previously. You know, he can be a winning coach having coached in the ACC. So I think the brighter days are ahead for both programs. And this is one of those, a reset year, so to speak. And I think going forward in the Metro Atlantic, only 10 teams make the conference tournament because it is a conference that has grown by four teams in the last 2 years. So not everybody goes to Atlantic City. How do you position yourself to at least get in the top 10? And then, you know, in the case of Mount St. Mary's this year, they were not the top team in the conference all year long, but these conference tournaments are so fun. They played well enough throughout the course of the year. They've got that Western New York connection. They had a new head coach this season, and they're a good team. And they're one of those stories where they've been building something over a couple of years, and now you go up against Duke today after winning in the first four game. It's going to be a tough road, but they're certainly a school that has really built the way that I like to, you know, watch the tournament.
And by the way, before we get to baseball and the Bisons, a couple of Canisius connections want to say happy birthday yesterday to former head coach Jim Barron. He was his birthday yesterday, so happy birthday to Jim Barron. And how about Mike McDonald and what he did with Damon this year? And I know it didn't turn out great for them last week, losing on Sunday to St. Thomas. But, boy, what a fantastic season that Damon, Mike McDonald, and his crew put together.
Absolutely. I mean, you go all the way back to the exhibition play and what they were building, and to run through 20-plus wins without a loss this season, even though it doesn't end up in a completely, you know, undefeated season, losing in their tournament. An incredible job, and I think just a great story of a coach that has really found a great spot for him to build a program, and he's worked so well there, won so many games there, and I think just an incredible story that thankfully I think a lot of the country has come to learn and shine a spotlight on.
Pat Malacaro here on the Wester Hotline, the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bisons. They begin next week. Friday is opening day. How about that, Pat? It's got to be the earliest opening day you can remember, at least here in Buffalo. I know that they've expanded the minor league season a little bit, but holy cow, Friday, March 28th, baseball in downtown Buffalo.
In 140 seasons of baseball, this will be the earliest opener. Last year, it'll surpass last year, March 29th. This year, the Bisons will open at 2:05 against the Rochester Red Wings. So at least, you know, this year you've got that regional rivalry, Buffalo, Rochester, and Syracuse, and the throughway rivalry that we have. So it'll be fun. Yesterday, I hope folks enjoyed the reveal of our reverse retro uniform for this season, something I had a big hand in kind of bringing to fruition. And I think fans of the early 90s or mid-90s, early 2000s Bisons will like it, and something we'll wear on Thursdays all throughout the season. But opening day next Friday, just a week away, hard to believe. There's still some final cuts. So the Blue Jays have a couple of decisions to make. Yesterday, several players were sent down to minor league camp, including starting pitcher Jake Bloss, who I would expect to be a big part of the Bisons' rotation this season. Someone that was acquired from the Astros last year in the Yusei Kikuchi trade, made eight starts with the Herd last season, and he's a young, up-and-coming pitcher. Actually went to Georgetown for his final season of college baseball, and is really some of the Blue Jays are very high on. Pitched in the spring breakout game, which Major League Baseball has now had all 30 teams play their top prospects in a showcase game, essentially, against another minor league system, and he pitched against Minnesota. Four strikeouts and two innings, was named a first-team spring breakout player. So I think the Bison's pitching staff this year is going to have a lot of prospects like Bloss to help lead the way.
Yeah, so the Bison's obviously the parent team is the Toronto Blue Jays. What about guys who kind of we could be seeing in Toronto, we could be seeing in Buffalo, you know, guys that you think could be kind of a little bit on the cusp or maybe have to have a cup of coffee here or there that are right there that guys people should be familiar with when they go to games?
Yeah, I think it starts in the position player side of things. A lot of players that got experience last year in Toronto because of injuries and trades. Mm-hmm. Well, this year the Blue Jays have kind of restacked the deck a little bit. So someone like Leo Jimenez, who was the Bison's starting shortstop right around opening day last year, potentially could start the season in Buffalo. I know the Blue Jays are very high on him. It's the situation of you've got Bo Bichette at shortstop right now. You're not going to supplant him. So does he get everyday playing time in Buffalo? Alan Roden was the International League Player of the Month in August last year, and he's somebody who was impressed in spring training this year. Very young, went to Creighton, third-round pick in 2022 out of Creighton, so he's only been in pro ball a couple of years, but he should be somebody that if he continues to hit the ball as well as he did, he hit 345 in August last year and over 300 overall in his time in Buffalo, over 71 games. If he continues anywhere close to that, you could be seeing him in Toronto very soon. That outfield in Toronto, they're dealing with some injuries, guys like Dalton Varsho, who are still coming back from a shoulder injury last year. So the outfield could be a spot where you see that up-and-down movement of some players. And then on the starting pitching, on the pitching side, I mentioned Jake Bloss, but also a left-handed reliever in Mason Fluharty. And somebody talking to the beat reporters in Toronto, I think one of the biggest compliments that I heard for him this past offseason is he's a throwback lefty. He's one of these guys, he's not just a specialist, he is a crossfire action, made 56 appearances for the Bisons last year, pitched the most of any pitcher on the Bisons roster last season, and he's somebody that's still very young. And here's a funny connection, mentioned the Yusei Kikuchi trade, the Blue Jays acquired Will Wagner, the son of Billy Wagner last year. He made his big league debut while Will Wagner and Mason Fluharty were college teammates at Liberty. And Mason was kind of the one that almost broke the news to Will Wagner that he was traded to the Blue Jays, and a funny little story there. So those are just a couple of the guys that maybe Bison fans came to know a little bit last year and should get to know more this year, and the fans in Toronto will see him as well.
Take me into the life of a play-by-play announcer for a minor league club. I mean, you got to get to know a lot of different players across a platform that a lot of people aren't as familiar with. Yeah, there's some stars that people know when they're coming up. We all know who Vlad Guerrero was when he's coming up, and you know the Bisons guys. But what's life like for a minor league play-by-play announcer across the AAA level when you're getting ready to take on a series against a team like, let's say, the Durham Bulls, who is the next series, or like Rochester, Worcester, the Red Sox, right? Worcester. What's it like for you?
You know, the thing I always come back to is everybody has a story, and it's finding those stories about players, and it's a six-day series, so not telling every single story on day one is such a big part of it, but, you know, just getting to know the players a lot and doing the research on them, you may find out, you know, that in the past there was a player who was with the Bisons, mentioned Billy Wagner. Well, Billy Wagner was his high school coach, and finding out those stories and expanding on them a little bit and getting to know the player and that comfortability of opening up some of those stories. So to me, that's the biggest part, and some of the most fun of the job is being able to tell those stories and finding out. Maybe a guy years ago talking to a player, he was working construction when he got drafted by the Blue Jays, and you know the story about him going home, leaving his job at the construction site, going home to tell his parents that he was drafted by the Blue Jays. You know, stories like that are just things you come to find out, whether it's doing the research. Maybe they just want, you know, sometimes players want to tell you those stories. So I think that's some of the most fun. And there's over the course of a year, last year there was 80 different stories. 8-0 of Bison's players to tell. So it always, over 150-game season, is a lot of fun. And, you know, even seeing some of the families come to town from time to time and, you know, interacting with them and different stories they have to share as well is some of the excitement of the job.
And the stadium, still the largest minor league stadium in the country, Pat. I mean, like, the capacity, and it's amazing. Stadium, I remember the stadium was built in the late 1980s, and they transitioned from Old War Memorial to then Pilot Field. But it's really a great atmosphere and experience, especially after what happened with the Blue Jays having to come to, you know, to Salem Field and how they redid the stadium. It's a great experience for everybody.
Yeah, I love it. And 16,600, give or take a few seats. You're right. It's still the biggest. We're still the big nights like Star Wars night coming up towards the end of May.
Yes.
This year, Harry Potter night. I think that's one fans are really going to enjoy. When you have those big nights, the Friday night fireworks, the KeyBank Independence Eve celebration that we'll have again this year, when you have 16,000 people in the ballpark, it really does have a big league feel. You know, in the middle of the summer, you've got a great game going on. The crowd's into it. You're right. You know, the bullpens are now beyond right field. So it has a little bit of the ballpark has a different look to it now a little bit in terms of, you know, that big league look again. So I think all those things together, that's some of the most fun when you're at a game and it's the middle of the summer and, you know, you're on game 110 of 150. Well, when there's 12 to 16,000 people in the ballpark, it doesn't feel like day 120 out of 150. It feels like, you know, you're in a major league park and it's so fun. So, yeah, and the, you know, when you come down to the ballpark, whether it's a Star Wars night, a Sunday where it's family themed, there's always promotions going on at the ballpark too. And our Canadian friends, you know, right now are running a promotion where we're at par promotion, 30% off the ticket price if you purchase from Bisons.com with a Canadian credit card. You can check it out there. You know, different things like that to try and encourage more fans to come check us out, come down to the ballpark, see a game, and, you know, stay for the show that we love to provide for fans and families as well.
Before I let you go, speaking of Canada, just a little bit on the Blue Jays from you here, and obviously a tough AL East, but is the story of Vlad and his pending free agency kind of unfortunately overshadowing, you know, this team and this season right now for you?
I think it will be for sure. I think that's one thing, you know, whatever city that the Blue Jays go to on the road, that'll always be the topic of conversation. But I think for Vladdy specifically, I don't think it'll be a distraction for him, and I don't think it'll be a distraction for his teammates. You know, this is something that they've dealt with before in terms of, you know, different players on expiring deals, and they don't get done. But I think for Vladdy, if they just go out and he has a good start to the year, Bo Bichette, who was hurt a lot of last season and struggled to get going, if the Blue Jays opening at home this year, something they hadn't been able to do 2 years in a row because of construction at Rogers Center, if they can get off to a good start, I think a lot of that conversation goes away, and the conversation becomes they're contending for the AL East in a wide-open division this year. I mean, between the Yankee injuries, the Orioles, you know, losing Corbin Burns in starting pitching-wise, and they're still very young. The Red Sox seem to be right there in the mix this year. The Blue Jays, even Tampa Bay, and who knows, with the Rays having to play all their games at George Steinbrenner Field this season. Yeah. And not having a home, so to speak, is that something they can rally around it and kind of build something, you know, that storybook ending. So in a wide-open division, if the Blue Jays get off to a hot start, I think a lot of the contract talk goes further down the list of the talking points and road cities, and they can just get back to baseball.
Pat, have a fantastic season. We'll be listening to you. 1520, the bet, obviously, for Buffalo Bisons games this year. And, of course, enjoy the summer. It's here, buddy.
Thanks, Al. I appreciate it.
All right, you got it. That is Pat Malacaro, play-by-play man of the Buffalo Bisons. Catch him when the games are played here on the Bet 1520, our sister station. In the meantime, we'll take a timeout. My buddy John Scott just strolled in with Heather Prusak and their – I guess almost newborn, we'd say, Logan. I have never met Logan. I have to say hi to him when we get to a break here. But come on over if you want to say hi to me, want to say hi to John, want to listen to us talk a little bit of college hoops and the Buffalo Bills. We are at Wayland Brewing. Come on down. It's 3470 North Buffalo Road in Orchard Park. We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up very quickly the hour, and then John Scott joins me at the top of the hour here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. You are always welcome to call here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. When you do, it's getting connected with our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Sal Capaccio here with you. John Scott, WGRZ TV2 Channel 2 Sports Director, is going to join me here in just a few minutes after the break. John is here. Come on by. Say hi to him. Want to say hi to Heather Prusak, who you know from Buffalo local media and TV as well. And they brought Logan. Logan Scott is here as well. He's their newborn baby. He's sleeping. He's beautiful. So come on by, say hi if you want to join us here for a little bit of college hoops action. John and I will talk about the Bills as well, and I will ask him, did you hear this? What I have to ask you from Jeremy White? Okay. I'm going to ask John what Jeremy said I have to ask him. The first thing that I'm going to ask John Scott when he comes back here, it relates to that Syracuse-Ohio State game many years ago in the Elite Eight. We'll do that when we come back here. We have the brackets, day number two of the tournament starting in, what, an hour and 20 minutes? That should be fun. And we're going to be talking a lot about that and the Bills and the moves they've made this offseason and what still needs to be done with John Scott joining me next year live at Wayland Brewing. Come on by, folks. Let's have a good time today. We're getting to lunchtime now, so I expect the place to start filling up, and I hope you're going to be here as well to say hi to us here on WGR's Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. We're going to get John Scott joining me here in just a moment here. We are at Wayland Brewing, located at 3740 North Buffalo Road in Orchard Park. I think we got John right here. So, hi, buddy. How are you? Can everybody hear you okay?
Nobody move.
We got a little short in the wire here. We had a little static. I think we're doing a little bit better here. So, I think we're okay. But, hey. Good to see you. I know you brought Heather with you, your lovely wife here from Buffalo Media, Heather Prusak, Channel 2, Channel 4. People know her from being in Buffalo Sports and Buffalo Media, and you have a newborn Logan. How's everything going as a first-time parent?
It's great. It's actually funny. Heather, we were in Jamaica this time a year ago, and exactly today we were sitting on the beach, and she dropped two positive pregnancy tests on my lap.
Oh, wow.
Now a year later, Logan will be 4 months tomorrow. So, or not tomorrow, excuse me, next week. So
I remember he was born, I believe, on my mom's birthday, mate? November 26th?
Correct.
Is that it? Okay.
Yeah.
I got
you. During the,
that's, I'll always remember that.
Coming out of the Bills bye week.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's, things are great. Fatherhood rules.
And, yeah, no doubt.
He's a great baby.
How many Ohio State onesies have you bought him so far?
Two. He wore one less than a week old for the Ohio State-Michigan game, which was a horrible introduction to the rivalry for him. And then I got him something that matched a shirt that I have from Homage.
Okay.
Shout out to them.
Yep.
And he rocked that start to finish of the college football playoff that ultimately led to a national championship.
Yeah, they did. What was that like for you, watching Ohio State and go on their run once they got to the playoff?
I got to admit, it does not feel like other ones. And it is because of the Michigan game. And it is such a strange feeling. I mean, a national championship is a national championship. It's also, I think, part of my concern of the expansion of the playoff in general is it minimizes the regular season and things like that. I mean, they didn't make the Big Ten championship game. They lost a couple times. And they still got in. And, yeah, they had to fight a challenging road to win the national championship, but it doesn't feel the same because a lot of the season was underwhelming, and then it kind of crescendoed, obviously, towards a championship at the end.
John Scott here, WGRZ TV2, Channel 2 Sports Director. All right, so speaking of Ohio State, Jeremy White made me promise I had to ask you,
okay,
was the 2012 elite game between Ohio State and Syracuse the worst officiated college basketball game in the history of college basketball?
No. And clearly, on the one side of things, we don't remember it exactly as vividly as those of you who went to Syracuse. I will also say,
like your wife, by the way.
Yeah, 11 years ago today, I think, is also when my Dayton Flyers Syracuse here in Buffalo.
Oh, yes, they did.
To advance to the Sweet 16.
That was Tyler Ennis' Syracuse team, right?
He was awful in that game.
Yeah.
C.J. Fair was the best player for Syracuse in that game. They tried rallying, but Ennis was horrible. Mm-hmm. And Dayton made the Elite Eight that year, best run they've had in over 30 years.
That the tournament's coming back to Buffalo next year, by the way.
It is.
Coming back to Buffalo. That game was in Buffalo. I remember that game. And, yes, it was terrible losing to Dayton here at home. And that Dayton team, they went on. What did you say? They went? Where did they go?
The Elite Eight.
Wow, that's right.
And they lost to
Florida. Who was on that team? Do you remember?
Oh,
any of the players?
I remember all of them now of note that anyone would know.
Really?
Probably there really isn't anyone. Jordan Seibert is a transfer from Ohio State that came. V. Sanford is a guy who hit the game winner against Ohio State in the opening round. Kendall Pollard was a big man. I mean, they were just a collection and certainly not the most talented Dayton team predating it, and even since, certainly not the 2020 team that I heard Pat mention, the tournament knocked out. But it was super exciting. They were just a collective, and that's what – and Pat was mentioning this. In this new era of the transfer portal and guys going to the draft, it's those mid-majors that can somehow – retain guys and have the experience of 3-4 years playing together that are the most dangerous to these teams, that even if they're more talented man-to-man and are at a higher level of conference or whatever it may be, those are the teams you look for when you're trying to pick your upsets, because the continuity and just being in battles for so long with one another, that is invaluable this time of year.
It's hard to get now, though, with obviously the way college sports is. You know what I remember about that game as well is post-game, I was on a media credential, and I went into the Syracuse post-game press room. And the way they do it in college, as you know, after the game, is they bring the coach and a couple of players out, and they say basically ask the student-athletes a question. Stupidly, I just jumped the gun. Asked Jim Boeheim a question first.
Oh, I'm sure.
And of course, it was you can't poke the bear. I'm not supposed to ask Jim Boeheim any questions until the. But he didn't like my question, so he fired off whatever it was at me. And because something about the timeout or whatever happened out of a break. Anyway, that was Jim Boeheim in a nutshell. And then obviously we know that a few years later now, several years later, he's moved on. And obviously you know how big Syracuse brand is here in Western New York. Your wife went to Syracuse, and you know just from the outside looking in, seeing the ACC, seeing Syracuse down, is it just tough as a college basketball fan and surprising maybe to you?
it's not surprising, I think, to the people that I know that are affiliated and root for Syracuse because they didn't particularly think the hire to replace Jim Boeheim was the proper way to go.
It was
the easy choice to go, and it seemed maybe by many the natural way to go. But I think when you succeed a legendary head coach, you're in a really tough spot. It's the same thing of whoever the quarterback after Jim Kelly is is in a really tough spot, and whoever the quarterback after Josh Allen, you're probably in a tough spot because the odds of ever living up to that are about as slim as you possibly can. And it's not happening at Syracuse, and now we will truly see how they view themselves as a true national basketball power and how much influence Jim Boeheim still has on the decision-making on campus to see if I think it's right to give one more season. But if you're Syracuse and the results are what they are, three seasons after Jim Boeheim, you have to believe and view yourself as an upper echelon college basketball program to say this is unacceptable and we need to move on and find someone else.
I am over your shoulder right now watching Seth Greenberg, and on the bottom of the screen it says, should the Big East and ACC merge? This is actually a topic being discussed in college hoops right now. What would you think about that?
I hate the realignment and all of the moving and shaking. And I'm watching conference tournaments, and you look up at the screen at random games, and you're like, oh, SMU is playing UConn, or Oregon is playing Penn State, and I hate it. Mm-hmm. I hate all.
How about the ACC tournament had Cal and Stanford playing each other?
It's just I am a traditionalist in many ways, especially when it comes to sports. So it's no surprise that I am not in favor of all of this. I just think it's ridiculous, and I think that taking out the regionalization of conferences is really hurtful to the overall rivalries and just connection that you can have with different teams and different schools.
You have anybody you particularly like in this tournament? What do you think is going to happen here?
Heather and I were talking as we're driving. She's like, I'm not very good at picking brackets. I'm like, who is good at picking brackets?
No, nobody is.
And like, my enjoyment and viewing of college basketball as a whole is down. So no, I just, it's a crapshoot to me. I do love that we can bet on the games now, and I was on my app all day yesterday doing things and the live betting and first half overs and all of that, and that kind of takes it out of the hands of I want this team to win. I have probably more so teams I don't want to win rather than those that
I like that.
I do. Speaking of our guy. Walton,
oh, my gosh, I know. Look at Ryan Stang with his Duke hoodie on comes in. Of course, I knew you'd be here because it's Duke Day. My gosh. Speaking of that. 694 entries in my pool. And as you say, I'm in 309th, Max in 238th. So he's beating me by like 70 spots right now for day
one. I'll say this, though, and I want to bracket this way. The first week doesn't matter.
No.
What matters is getting teams to the Sweet 16 and beyond. And so, sure, I picked UC San Diego to beat Michigan, but I had them losing in the second round. I mean, it was a great game at the end, and should they maybe have? Sure, but it's not going to kill your bracket. And then if you hit on Drake or McNeese or some of these and you don't have them going too far or they don't go beyond this, it doesn't really do you any good. What matters is what largely ends up being more chalk than not, Sweet 16, Elite 8, and beyond. And if you land those, and obviously the Final Four and the championship game are what matters most. So if you're looking like you and even myself and you're like, my goodness, I'm far down in the standings. I got to scroll for 5 minutes. You're still alive as long as your teams are still late in the tournament.
That's why I reward upsets. I like to pick the upsets. You can get a few extra points here and there by doing that. All right, let's talk Bills. Anything the Bills have or haven't done, John Scott, that surprised you so far here during the free agency period? Have or haven't done so far?
Well, obviously, not to be redundant, cornerback two is the most obvious choice.
I would think they would have attacked that a little bit more.
I do, but I think maybe you said it yesterday. I think there's some ongoing dialogue and understanding of where things maybe are or could be with Rasul Douglas.
Sure.
That just seems like he's so prudent, Brandon Bean, at plugging holes to make sure he's not pinned in a corner come draft time, that I find it hard to believe he wouldn't have made it more of a priority since that was a starting position. Yeah, Joey Bosa was a necessity in terms of what he potentially can bring to the defensive line, mm-hmm. but you had bodies there that at least you could fill that if things did not shake out how you wanted to. Same thing with the interior of the defensive front. You have guys there. Do you need upgrades? Sure. Wide receiver, same thing. Okay, you lose Mac Hollins. You swap him out with Joshua Palmer. Fine. Cornerback, too, is the one thing where if you rolled out the ball tomorrow, it's what? Jamarcus Ingram or
Dane Jackson? That's it.
And they're not going to do that. It's no slight to those guys, and it doesn't mean they couldn't win the job, but they're going to have a more solidified option there. That's where I tend to feel, and I don't have knowledge of this directly, I just have this feel that they've had ongoing conversations with Rasul Douglas. He's exploring what his market could be. And as Brandon said a week ago, we got a lot of time. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a window here before the draft. There's a window from the draft to training camp and all of that. Mm-hmm. And Douglas is maybe looking at it the same way. He's going to say, all right, let me see what a team maybe does after the draft. And then maybe they can regroup. And if there's not a market for Douglas or the market doesn't satisfy him, why wouldn't you come back to this team? That's kind of what I feel based on his inactivity, Brandon, being at the position that maybe is almost a safety net below.
My biggest surprise is not attacking the interior defensive line as much as I thought they would, based on things that they even said at the end of the season. That they did go out and get Larry Ogunjobi, then they find out he's got the PED suspension. And this goes to my point, which is the reason they still signed him, what did Brandon say? The options were gone. Right. I was surprised they didn't attack that earlier.
That leads me to believe they're evaluating the draft and say, what are the deepest position groups with us having three picks in the top two rounds?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's the defensive front. That's edge rusher as well as the interior. Yep. And to me, I also believe they're not making 10 picks. Can you throw 3 5th rounders and move up to the third? Probably not. But I think there are elevations to get third, fourth rounders more because you just do not need that amount of day three guys. They're not going to make the team. It just causes a little more chaos in terms of the how do we slide guys and maneuver things like that. So I think maybe that's why they didn't address the defensive line as a whole and particularly the interior, because they view that as, hey, the best value if we stick at 30 or even move a little bit up or down from that slot is being able to get a really solid defensive tackle.
It's kind of a trade. Von Miller for Joey Bosa. Are they better?
Yes.
A lot?
Remains to be seen.
Because of the health?
Yes.
If he's healthy, they're certainly better, right? But that's what it comes down to?
100%. And Bosa wasn't healthy last year. He said he was played about 70%.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers were pretty identical to Von Miller, who mm-hmm. played 13 games. They were about the same type of player.
Right. Six years younger, too.
Right. I liked what Von did last year. I think when you stood here a year ago and said, what are we going to get from Von Miller? If I said second on the team in sacks, but he only had six, you'd say, well, that's a problem for the pass rush. But 6 sacks in 13 games, I know they were kind of clumpy beginning and end, but I think he had moments that if he – Brandon Bean leaving the door open. If he was your 4th or 5th pass rusher on a low deal with the value that Bean really heightened about just his character and his championship mindset, I'm okay with that. I don't think it gets to that point, but I think they are better with Bosa because the best type of player is a hungry player that has to prove themselves. Because if this goes not maybe the Joey Bosa type way this year, where does that land him at his career?
Yeah, he would love to have a great year. I love what he said, and of course you're familiar with him from Ohio State, but he said it's like going back to Ohio State where I'm going to a football town with a football culture. All there is football here. No disrespect, right? He's not trying to say it that way, but he's been out in L.A., and you know his brother's out in San Francisco. He had a chance maybe to go to Miami, the word was. It's like, I just want to concentrate on football. I like that part of what I'm hearing about him.
I also think it's another example of the Bills culture and the Bills organization is something people want to come here. It's not just Josh Allen. Obviously, Josh Allen elevates them into a Super Bowl contender annually. But on the defensive side of things, Bobby Babich is really well-respected and really, really well-liked. Sean McDermott as a defensive mind is. And I think I brought this up on our show on Monday. Leonard Floyd, a similar type guy in terms of the – he had never before coming here been a heavy rotation type guy. He was a 70, 80, 90% snap guy. And you saw, yeah, he tailed off at the end of that season, but you saw what he could do when, as the Bills say, the best version of themselves and in a rotation to save them from themselves, for lack of a better term. So I think that was also appealing to Bosa, who even said with a specific number, 35 to 40 snaps might be his sweet spot. And that's what I think is perfect for him in this rotation.
John Scott joining me here. We are live at Whalen Brewing. Come on by, 3740 North Buffalo Road in Orchard Park. And Logan has woken up, and John is saying hi, and he's bringing him right on the set. Is he going to talk to us? What does he think about the Bills' moves so far? Logan, what do you think about the Bills' moves so far? Okay. I don't know if that's good or bad. He doesn't really he doesn't want to tell us what the moves are.
He's soaking it all in.
There, I love it. I love it. Come on by, say hi if you want to talk to John. Say hi to him. Heather as well. And we're going to be watching some college basketball a little bit later here for a little while. All right. I have a debate on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo with Matt Bove, our buddy from Channel 7. He believes wide receivers is still more of a priority for them in the draft than I believe. Because I just don't see them taking one a little bit higher. And let's be honest, this isn't the greatest wide receiver class compared to the last several. I just think this team is going to roll with what they have. There's no room if you take somebody at 30 or in the second round to really insert them. Now, a lot of it depends on what they feel about Keon Coleman, but I don't think they're pulling any sort of shoot on him in any respect.
I think they should.
Okay.
I think they should.
Take one early.
Yes.
Okay.
Because my belief, and it's I hate always doing like a Chiefs comparison. It's just kind of low-hanging fruit. But I don't think the Bills need an A-plus bona fide number one receiver. I think the everybody eats mentality is a great philosophy for the offense. But why can't they everybody eats as a BB-plus regular type receiver with A potential? And at this point in time, who could you say amongst this wide receiver group has a ceiling that could get you an A-plus type game? I don't think there is anybody on there. I like Khalil Shakir. He's a great complementary piece.
Right.
But if he's the one that you're hanging your hat on is, hey, this is our best receiver, that's not what you should be surrounding Josh Allen with. Even if Keon Coleman elevates his game and plays maybe more in that Seattle Titans-type range that we saw him pop a little bit before the injury, I don't think Keon Coleman is a guy that's going to be an A-plus type receiver maybe every now and again. But he's someone, if he's your number two, I'm cool with that. Or if he's like 2A and 2B, that's where like I see like a Matthew Golden. That's kind of my draft crush. Obviously, he has the speed that they're lacking as well. When you talk about, and I think you've said it, you comprise a wide receiver group almost like a starting five in basketball. Joshua Palmer is the man beater, and Keon's the size, and you have Shakir as the slot and things like that. You talk about space, and I was thinking this too. Why does Curtis Samuel have to be on this team? I know the money is a little bit tricky, but certainly from a production standpoint, they would be banking on him being better in year two and healthy. But if you drafted a receiver because it fell to you in the right capacity in rounds one or two, I'm cool with it. Also, look beyond this season. I mean, I know they signed Joshua Palmer to a longer deal, but and Coleman's here and Shakir, but Samuel's not. And to me,
it's got 2 years left, I think.
And I think if you could slot guys maybe in their proper roles if you drafted one day one or day two.
All right. And then safety, also an interesting spot because right now I believe it's going to be Taylor Rapp and Cole Bishop. You could do a lot worse than DeMar Hamlin as a veteran backup. That's what he is to me. He started 17 games, or he started for this team last year, and did a nice job. He's not a ball-hawking athletic freak. We know that. I think Cole Bishop's that guy. But the way that they've talked about Cole Bishop and, hey, he's still got to earn it and everything, do you think that there's still an opportunity to draft over him?
I mean, Bean goes best player.
Yeah.
And they definitely, beyond this season, need a running mate for Cole Bishop. So I wouldn't hate it. And as we've seen, they make it clear safety is one of the positions you almost need a red shirt year as a young player. And so if they drafted one in the second round and they don't see the field, okay. I'm not going to hate it because they have done a pretty good job at seeing years down the road.
It's so funny you say that. When they drafted Cole Bishop last year, I tweeted out, hey, I don't think this guy's going to play all that much this year. He's going to be a reserve. He's going to play special teams. I got murdered on social media from people saying, oh, my God, that makes it a terrible second-round pick. No, it doesn't.
Well, that's because people – there is a shocking, polarizing conversation around DeMar Hamlin. People just
yes.
don't like him.
That's right.
And they
yes.
think he's a terrible player, which I push back on. I recognize and understand his limitations.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills do too.
Yep.
But similar to Levi Wallace and Dane Jackson and some of these other guys, he is a solid veteran player who's been in the system that you know what you're going to get out of when you throw him out there.
And they really care about guys at that position who've been in the system.
100%. So to your point with DeMar, I think he's actually going to be in his perfect role as a backup
yes.
and a special teams guy who can slide in if injuries hit them, which Rapp certainly has a history of that, and you can – I will feel good about it.
maybe yes. Not, yes.
Maybe not the DeMar Hamlin people on the other side of things. But back to the drafting, sure, like I'm a huge Cam Lewis guy. And Derek Forrest, I think people liked what they saw in his 1 year he got the opportunity. Does that mean he has to be on the team? I think we get a lot of times lost in the sauce of free agency.
Yes.
And
where does he fit now?
Yeah.
Where does he fit in the
90s? Oh, this guy's definitely yes. going to make it. And this guy's definitely going to be impactful and all in this and that. And then it's funny, you revisit things in October, November, and you're like, why did I think that? Or boy, did I get that wrong. And so, yeah, you see a Derek Forrest, you see all of the guys they have at safety. There's no reason that necessarily they couldn't find one in the draft that could push one of them out and make them a better team and still not see the field.
All right, before we let you go, Heather's here. I'm going to ask you both a question because we've had a debate. Yana and I, my wife, we had a debate the other day, and I thought she was crazy, and then I brought it to the group, and our buddy Andy Young sided with her. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard me. You saw the tweet I had on this the other day. Who is more world famous? More people in the world know who this person is, Josh Allen or Haley Steinfeld?
Heather and I have talked about this before. It's interesting.
Yana says Haley. I say Josh. Andy Young agreed with her, said Haley. I think Jeremy and Joe both said Josh. But we are in we would think Josh in a lot of ways. Maybe I'm being too blinded.
So I'm going to say world famous.
Matt Bove said Haley because of the Marvel. And I said, but do people really know she is? They might watch Marvel. But do they know who Haley Steinfeld is?
I mean, she had some popular songs.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pitch Perfect movie,
yes.
That's what I knew her from.
She's on the cover of Vogue, I believe, right?
Sure.
I think someone told me that.
I actually saw a trailer for a movie with Michael B. Jordan that she's the lead.
Okay.
The female lead in.
Uh-huh.
That's coming out, I think, in April. So I think it's funny. I think they each have elevated the other.
Yes, that's right.
To make them both bigger stars. Now, Josh is all over the place now on national marketing campaigns and obviously is the MVP. When they first started dating, I think it probably just depended upon the group of people you were talking to. When I talk to my friends from college, they're like, who in the heck is Haley Steinfeld? And I'm like, oh, she's the one that's from Pitch Perfect, and I guess she has a few hit songs.
Okay.
But I'm sure if you went to non-football people, they would be like, who's Josh Allen? They'd be like, I don't know. Like, I was on a plane to maybe it was the playoff game, and I was sitting next to these two women who were going to Florida. I think we were connecting somewhere south. They're like, who's Josh Allen? But I bet you if I would have asked him, do you know who Haley's? I think I actually said, oh, she's dating Haley Steinfeld. And the light bulb went off.
Wow.
So it's a fun conversation, but I think it's totally based upon your perspective and maybe your interests.
I love it. All right. I'll let you get back to your son and your wife here. Thanks a lot for coming by and sticking around. And I'll be off here in a little while. We're going to talk a little more hoops. We got some people filling up here to watch some college basketball. So hope everything's well with you. And obviously people can catch you on TV. And where else can they find you?
Yeah, Twitter at JohnScottTV. Sports Talk Live is Monday nights
yes.
at 7 o'clock on Channel 2. Vic Carucci joins me, Adam Benigni as well. Paul Hamilton.
Yes, our Paul is on there with you.
We're going to maybe try to get a little more guests on as we're turning the corner towards the draft, and it's a little more loose. But, yeah, Channel 2.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot. John Scott, come on in. Say hi to John. Say hi to Heather and beautiful Logan Scott. We'll be back after this timeout at the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Zachary, he'll put up a three. No good. Rebound, a scramble. Hunter has it. Hunter at the buzzer. It's good, but Cowboy up. McNeese has its first ever NCAA tournament victory.
I think that's Andrew Catalan on the call, right? Is that Andrew Catalan? Yeah, yeah. It's our buddy. He does the Bills preseason games on television. He does a great job. He's an up and comer, and he has been for a while. But he does a lot of obviously NFL and for CBS. He also does a lot of Masters. You heard him there on the tournament. But Andrew did a great job there. Cowboy up. I love it. McNeese State. Okay, they beat Clemson yesterday. Former Syracuse guard Kadir Copeland, 16 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists in that game for McNeese State. Good to see that. But let me talk about this coach for McNeese State for a second. His name is Will Wade, okay? Will Wade deserves some sort of recognition and award. Finally, transparency and truthfulness and honesty, and it's rewarding and it's paying off for him and his team. I don't know if you've heard this story or if you've seen this story. So Will Wade is the coach at McNeese State. He is the head coach at McNeese State, okay? He is formerly the head coach at VCU and at LSU. He was just let go at LSU a couple years ago. He's been at McNeese for a couple years now. Excuse me, sorry. He is about to take, and he actually has already accepted, get this, he's already accepted the head coaching job at North Carolina State. Yes, while his team is still playing in the tournament. While they just won a game in the tournament. How many times have we seen coaches and we heard coaches, I have no interest in going to that job, when you all know it's a bunch of bull. I have no interest in leaving. I have no interest in going. Oh, I'm just concentrating on what's happening here. I just want to do what's best for my team here, and we want to stay focused on the game. This guy, to his credit, said, yep, I'm going to North Carolina State. And guess what? My kids know about it. You know what he did? He went and he had a meeting with his kids. He had a meeting with, I call them kids, or college-age kids, right? I still call them kids. I'm old. So he goes and he has a meeting with his team, with his kids, with his players. And he says, hey, guys, this is the deal. I have a chance to go to a Power 5 conference, be the head coach at North Carolina State. And, you know, if you in life have a chance to do something to better yourself and you want to go somewhere, you should do that too. And you can do that too. I'm guessing that's what the conversation revolved around because he said, everybody knows the deal here. He said he even had kids. Players come to him and say, if you go to a Power 5, can I come with you? I think this is part of the reason his team won. I couldn't prove it, you know, statistically. It's just anecdotally to me. I think a reason why his team won, the reason why they played so well, is because they have a coach that was truthful and honest with them and that they're supporting. I think it's awesome that Will Wade did this. Stop with this, coaches. Yet, here's a great lesson for every coach out there, whether it's college basketball or college football, okay? Great lesson for every coach. Just be honest and tell your players. They want transparency. They want honesty. They might be mad. You might have guys that go, wait a minute, coach, I came here to be with you. I'm sorry. This is life. It's the life we live all now, all of us, because that player has an ability to leave. You know what's always been said about coaches? You know, how come the players are the only ones that have to have loyalty and coaches don't? And I understand that to a degree, but back before NIL and Portal and all that, you know, I guess old man yelling at clouds, I'd always say, well, look, coaches are also adults with careers, and these are amateurs going into college, and then everything changed, right? And you get that, where you got to hold it against the player, but you can't hold it against the coach. He's going to leave. Well, that's all changed now. They can all leave. They can leave at any moment. We have a free and open portal for anybody at any moment. It is unmitigated free agency. They're getting paid. They can go and transfer it anytime they want, as many times as they want. Well, guess what? Coaches can do it too. Coaches can also get fired. Just like players can basically can say, we don't kind of want to have you around anymore, I guess. Right? We could do that. Not going to renew your scholarship. I think that can happen. You're not going to play next year. You might want to have a better situation. I give Will Wade a lot of credit. I think more coaches should do this. I think it is a reason why McNeese won yesterday. I think it's a reason why his team they're trusting him. They're playing hard for him. Not because we want to go out with him on top. It's, hey, there's no issue here. We have a coach that believes in us on the court, and he's doing what's best for him, and he was super honest with us, and that's great, and we support that. Because just like the coach, I just told you, a guy like Kadir Copeland can do the same thing. Kadir Copeland played at Syracuse last year. He's at McNeese State now. Scored 16 points in the game last night. Nothing wrong with that. He can go wherever he wants now. This is the new world we live in college athletics. And I don't love the world we live in college athletics now, I'll be honest with you, but at least if we're going to live in this world, let's be honest with each other and let's tell everybody what's going on and what the deal is. And that's what he did. And I love his quote. He said, everybody here knows what the deal is. So good for you, Will Wade. I'm glad that that happened. Today, here we go. Baylor at Mississippi State gets us going at 12:15 p.m. Mississippi State, one of the six Bulldog nicknames. Remember that yesterday? Went over that with Josh. Six teams named the Bulldogs. Baylor. Baylor's always been interesting. Baylor, they are still coached by Drew, right? Baylor, let me just see. Basketball. Because the guys this morning were having a discussion about Bryce Drew. Remember Bryce Drew? Scott Drew, yes. Scott Drew is the coach at Baylor. But the guys this morning were having a discussion about Bryce Drew and how Bryce Drew had one of the best buzzer beaters ever in college basketball. That was when he was playing for his dad at Valparaiso. And Bryce Drew is now actually the head coach at Grand Canyon. And they're in the tournament, doing a great job. Robert Morris, great story there, Robert Morris. Our buddy Tim Benz, who comes on with me from Pittsburgh, he's done a lot of stuff with Robert Morris, play-by-play. We talked about them, but, man, they are up against it, against former University at Buffalo head coach Nate Oates and Alabama. I gotta guess that line's going to be close to what that one was yesterday we talked about. Yesterday, I asked you what the line was in one game. It was 31.5. This one, Josh, 21.5 for Alabama. 21.5. It might be up to 22.5 now. Alabama.
Is that the biggest one of the day so far, or is there anyone there?
I'd have to go through these. I'm not really sure. I mean, let me check here. What's Iowa State? Iowa State's only 14.5. I would think Alabama. No, it's got to be Duke against Mount St. Mary's, right? Let me guess it. What do you want to guess this one? Oh, okay. This has got to be the biggest one of the day. What do you think Duke is favored against Mount St. Mary's?
Let's go. Okay. So it's if
it's
bigger
more than 22.5.
And it's bigger than yesterday?
I didn't say if it is or not.
Okay,
about the same, give or take.
Let's go 32.5.
You're right. It's exactly 32.5.
Wow.
Good
right,
job.
Cool. Sweet.
32.5 for Duke being favored against Mount St. Mary's out of the Metro today. Lipscomb is taking on Iowa State. We told you yesterday you want a team to root for because of nickname. Root for Lipscomb. They're the Bisons. Why not? But then again, you got Paul Hamilton who went to Iowa State. He's going to be dialed into that game. That's a 1:30 p.m. tip. Colorado State taking on Memphis. Our guy TJ Reeves joined me the other day, sideline reporter for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's a big Memphis guy. He went to Memphis. This is very interesting, though. Josh, did you want to talk about lines? How about this? I don't know how often this has happened. Colorado State is the 12 seed. They are favored on the line against Memphis, the 5 seed.
Wow. That's impressive. There was one yesterday on the spread. North Carolina was a 1.5-point favorite over today, actually, too. I'm sorry. I forgot that was today. They're against Ole Miss today.
Same thing. You're right. Yeah. You're right. 11 over a 6. This is a 12 over a 5. 1.5 Colorado State favorite over Memphis. You're right. North Carolina, 1.5 favorite over Ole Miss. And they're an 11, and Ole Miss is a 6. Interesting. All right, we told you about Mount St. Mary's taking on Duke today. Remember when Duke did lose as a 2 seed to Belmont several years ago? I remember that game. I actually I didn't have Duke going far, so I actually took Belmont to win in that game just because I'm like, I don't have Duke going far anyway, and I'll look smart if I win, and I did. But I really didn't know Belmont would win. I just kind of took a shot at it. But Belmont had a whole bunch of seniors. To John Scott's point earlier, if you can build a team with a bunch of experience and guys playing together, that's who you look for in the tournament a lot of these times. That's why a team like Belmont a few years ago was able to upset a team like Duke. Vanderbilt taking on St. Mary's. Don't confuse Mount St. Mary's against St. Mary's, folks. All right? They're both playing today, though. In fact, they'll both be playing at the same time. Tournament, the schedule committee should not have done that. Don't put Mount St. Mary's on the same time as St. Mary's. You're confusing people with their brackets. St. Mary's favored by 4.5 over Vandy today. Still in the early sessions, Carolina taking on Ole Miss. I'm sorry. I just think Carolina should not have even made the tournament. And then they won in that, you know, play-in game. They're taking I'm rooting against them because I don't think they should be in this tournament. But it's Carolina, and once you get here, anything can happen. We'll see. Just told you about Grand Canyon. Head coach Bryce Drew taking on Maryland. Sneaky, sneaky team here, Grand Canyon, against a team in Maryland who definitely has had their share of ups, winning a national championship, and downs. I guess anytime you're a program that's been around a long time and been in a lot of tournaments, you're going to have those as well, where you lose as a team that's highly favored. Florida is favored by 28.5 over Norfolk State. Florida is a team that can win this whole damn thing. If you want to tie into Buffalo, Carlin Hartman, former Grand Island Athletic star, is an assistant coach at the University of Florida. Kentucky, they are taking on Troy. So Kentucky and Pope's first year as head coach there. You know, you get Calipari leaves. He goes to Arkansas, and they go into the tournament. They had a really nice win last night, by the way. Mark Pope takes over. Alum at Kentucky. He's the new head coach there. Does a nice job to give them a 3 seed. New Mexico is at Marquette. Marquette's always fun, right? I mean, it's just, it's a school in Wisconsin. You don't think too much about them. Bam, suddenly basketball tournament time. There's Marquette always showing up on your screen. New Mexico's at Marquette. Marquette, the 7 seed. New Mexico, the 10 seed. That is a 7:25 tip. We're talking about the nighttime session now. The Akron Zips take on Arizona. Akron out of the MAC, of course, where UB is, taking on Arizona. Arizona's had their fair share of losses. They're also a team. There haven't been a lot of them, but there's been several 2 seeds to lose to 15s. If I remember this, Josh, look it up. I'm not looking. People are here could tell me. I believe Arizona lost to UC Santa Clara when they were the 2. You can look it up for me. Arizona was the 2, UC Santa Clara. And it was, I think their nickname was the Fighting Banana Slugs. That's like one of the a funny name. You can look that up for me. Is that true? Arizona loses a 2 seed to UC Santa Clara.
I think it was UC Santa Cruz, potentially.
Oh, thank you. Darn it. Okay. I was kind of.
That's what it was.
I was kind of like 60, 70% right, I guess. I'll take that. Oklahoma at Connecticut, taking on Connecticut. So UConn, defending 2-time champ. You're really going to go against Danny Hurley, folks? You might. The team isn't as good this year, but he's still Danny Hurley. Still has a very good team, very good program, but they are an 8 seed in this tournament. They haven't had quite the season, taking on Oklahoma tonight at 9:25. A lot of UConn fans here in Western New York. Xavier. Josh, do you say Xavier or Xavier? Do you say the X?
I say Xavier, actually. I don't know if that's the right way or not, but
I do too.
I never know which way is the right way.
Xavier taking on Illinois. That should be a fun game. Only a 3.5-point spread there. That's tonight at 9:45. Bryant, another Bulldog in the tournament. Bryant taking on Michigan State. Maybe some Tom Izzo pixie dust going on this time of year. He's got his team back to where they had been for many years, but suffered a few down years there. But now Michigan State back to a 2 seed taking on Bryant. And then late tonight, Liberty taking on Oregon. I have Oregon advancing far. I tweeted out my bracket yesterday, Josh, and somebody's like, you know Oregon stinks this year, right? I'm like, well, first of all, they don't stink. They're a 5 seed. But honestly, it's more of a sentimental pick. My brother went there. He got his PhD from there. I've been out there. I visited the campus. So I'm going to root for Oregon. I like their colors. All right? So I'm going to root for Oregon. They have the 10-10 game tonight. All right, we're going to get you up to the top of the hour here. Sabres Live coming up next. One final timeout, one final segment here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio live with you from Whalen Brewing in Orchard Park. We'll tell you all about it and what's going on after this timeout. All right. Thanks a lot for coming out today. Thanks to John Scott, Heather Prusak, Logan Scott for being here. Enjoy North Buffalo Street in Orchard Park. Whalen Brewing, come on out. Say hi to me. Sabres Live up next.